Doesn't matter, I can show. Welcome everybody, thanks for coming to this special thing. Last year we tried this out for the first time. We had Willie Blotton in town, and we had to hear some of his book and a little bit of a chat with him, and it was just a nice way to start off the day. So we thought we'd try it again, and this time we have a very different presentation for you. I'm glad you all came. I think it's going to be really exciting and wonderful. Today we have a special talk hosted by Christine Heise. She hosts a radio show called Happy Sad, and it plays a lot of the music that we love and enjoy at this festival, and she's been a great help in promoting the festival as well, so we're glad to have her and her perspective. And she's invited some wonderful women of Americana to join us today. First of all, the festival this year is stacked with incredible women, female performers. Did you enjoy the shows last night?
They were wonderful, right?
Dietmar worked really hard to make sure that we got the best talent possible, and that of course means a lot of women, because of course they do almost everything better than men, as we're finding out all the time. But unfortunately, the music industry, like so many, is often kind of dominated by men's perspective and men's power. The patriarchy is still unfortunately alive and well, but with talent and insights like these wonderful women have, I know that we're going to open things up and hear from the people who really count and have the real ideas around here. So we're going to be joined today by Michelle Stoddard and Pearl Charles and Haley Reardon. And like I said, our friend Christine Heise. Please welcome.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Like you already said, I run a radio show in Berlin, actually. It's called Happy Sad, and I cover a lot of Americana, soul, and pop over there. I'm with this festival since several years now. I guess I discovered it with the second time, so not the first one, but ever since I'm here, and always discovered a lot of new bands, a lot of bands that I always wanted to see, and that is a great joy for me. And this year in especially, we have at least three, we have others too, but here we have at least three very interesting female performers. He already introduced her name, Michelle Stoddard, Pearl Charles, and Haley Reardon. And I'd like to give this little talk a headline, and the headline would sound like, "The possibilities are endless." And I want to discuss with you the special conditions, the special needs of women in music in this genre that is open to almost any style, but is rooted in authentic songwriting. I want to quote from a little text I wrote to Dietmar for the introduction of this panel. So I quote myself now. Americana songwriting is rooted in authentic experience in times of maximum ease of distribution through streaming services, social media, and genre-focused festivals like Static Roots, bypassing the guardians of the music industry and engaging directly with fans. A new era of self-confidence leads to self-determination, creativity, and seriousness. Women are the creative engine of a genre that reclaims old values for new eras. So let's talk about the endless possibilities, get to know the facets of female artists, and unite against obstacles and victimhood. I hope you can agree to that. Usually when women are speaking about their position in a genre or general in music, you always hear a lot of complaints. And I would prefer very much that we focus on what are possible, what is possible, what is the wide open we are able to get into. So, starting with you, Haley, I'm so glad to get to know you. You're the youngest on this panel. You're from Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Actually, I notice you're from Boston.
Near Boston.
Near Boston, okay. Yes, so tell us a little bit about the background, a background of your songwriting, because you are kind of a... How do you feel in the genre of Americana? Because you are more a singer-songwriter, actually. You don't... You have very rarely country or blues or whatever roots.
Yes. I am a singer-songwriter through and through. I relate to that very much, mainly because of the freedom in that. But I'm from near Boston, and I grew up just geographically very lucky to be surrounded by a very strong New England folk music scene in the region I'm from, in the U.S. And I started writing songs very young, when I was 12, 13, and was adopted very quickly into this folk music community and mentored by a lot of older many Americana and folk and singer-songwriter artists who informed me and mentored me a lot. So I relate to the Americana world, but yes, I identify very much as a singer-songwriter in this singular perspective of translating a life through song and then sounds. I go different directions and try different things, but I feel adjacent to that world because of my music.
Mm. Maybe we should talk about roots a little bit later in general, but maybe you can give us a little idea of what your roots are. Who do you look up to? Who inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is interwoven with, like I said, the music community that I was sort of raised by, and I was very much raised by older musicians. I was the baby in the room for many, many years. And so a lot of those people are also through and through singer-songwriters, like Anais Mitchell and Lori McKenna. Mm-hmm. But my sort of musical home growing up was a place called Club Passim in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which was formerly Club 47, which was very instrumental in the sort of 60s folk revival in Boston specifically. So there's a community around that club and its lineage of artists outside of this singer-songwriter world of, you know, blues and Americana in the way of, like, you know, Appalachian and roots music, mm-hmm. American roots music, that I was surrounded by, even though I was very much a singer-songwriter in what I was creating. So I hope that answers that.
Yeah, of course, very interesting. I mean, yeah. And how much... We'll get to that bit later.
Okay.
Maybe we continue with Pearl Charles. Welcome to you as well, because very special for me the situation is... I hope, by the way, my English is good enough. I'm so sorry sometimes. I know your music since the debut album. I bought it. We just shared experience with Ulrich. He's also a fan from the day first, I guess. I bought it in Rough Trade London. Still have the original sticker. They used to have these stickers with little description of the music on it. And I didn't even listen to your music, but what I read was so magnifying for me. Tell us a little bit, when did you start it, and how come this is the first time you're in Germany?
Well, to answer that question, I was supposed to come here on a tour during COVID, but it got canceled because of some variant. So it's been a long time coming, and I wish it had been sooner, but I'm so grateful that finally the time has come. But yeah, when it comes to my background in music, I mean, I started playing piano when I was 5, and both my parents are artists in their own way and writers, and so they really encouraged me to explore songwriting when I became a teenager, and I feel really grateful that they were so encouraging and kind of pushed me in that direction. Ultimately, I found that songwriting is my ultimate form of expression. But yeah, I experimented with all sorts of different genres, and if you're talking about my first EP, that was almost more like 60s garage, but there was always a country sort of tinge, which is funny because I'm born and raised in Los Angeles, so not exactly a country girl per se, but there was just something that always drew me to that style of music. I mean, my parents really grew up showing me like the classic singer-songwriters, Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, John Prine, And they all have their roots in folk music. So whatever kind of music you're making, ultimately, if you're a songwriter and a storyteller, I feel like that's kind of where that tradition comes from.
Mm. I read a very funny quote to your music, something between Graham Parsons and ABBA. I thought, that is so funny. But it's true. It's actually true, because you have this psychedelic country Californian style as well as the up-tempo disco ABBA energy. So how do you feel about this comparison?
Oh, I'm honored. I'm one of my favorite artists. Also, I live in Joshua Tree with my partner, Michael Rault, who is going to play guitar with me today and mixed my most recent record. We write a bunch of songs together. So we definitely try to embody that Graham Parsons cosmic country thing. And I love, you know, the male-female duos of Emmy Lou and Graham and, you know, George and Tammy. It's a historic country music kind of thing. And I love how Graham and, you know, ours, like the band, and, you know, they kind of brought country music to rock and roll and combined those two genres together. And then obviously a lot of those people did go into a disco-y kind of direction. ABBA's another great example of just the eclecticness of an act. You know, they don't just have one sound, and so every album has a bunch of different tastes, and I love to mix things together and create something new.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Pearl.
Thank you.
And Michelle, I'm so happy to have you here. I know you have been in the Whispering last year already, because Hannah White was here.
That's right.
And you are connected with her, so this year it's true, you are here. I'm so happy. So, Michelle Stoder, tell her, I know you ever since the days of the Magic Numbers, of course. The first album is celebrating the 20th anniversary this year.
Yeah.
And you went afterwards, after the group, you went solo for at least three albums now. You're a conductor, you're an arranger, you're a producer. So tell us a little bit about the variety of your passion. It's so much.
Oh, well, thank you. So interesting hearing both of you as well. And lovely to be here. I think I'll sort of clarify the sort of timeline of the band. I joined with my brother in the Magic Numbers like when I was like 19. And it was very much like, he loved music, and it was very much like I was this sort of sibling on the side of, like, you know, looking up to him and seeing all the stuff that he did. And our mum and dad gave us the living room to just play music. And, you know, we put the mattresses up on the wall and the egg boxes and, you know, soundproofed it as best as we could. And that's kind of like how I kind of learned, was just like making mistakes and playing. And every time he'd leave his acoustic guitar, like around, or his guitar, I'd pick it up and I'd take it to my room and start writing songs. So I was always a songwriter, I think. And like when you say, like, the, you know, that's kind of like the... And because I was painfully shy, like really insanely shy, it's taken me a long time to be up here and talk. Playing music is fine, but talking on the mic is a whole other thing. So songwriting for me was a way of finding my voice and saying the things that were hard to say aloud, really, especially within the family and, you know, within the noise of society and growing up as a teenager, as a girl as well, and just like all of those kind of difficulties within that. So then the band sort of started, and the band is still together. We're still together. So
wow,
we're still touring. We're writing a new record, which is exciting, so hopefully next year we'll have a Magic Numbers record out there.
Cool.
So alongside that, my brother was the one who sort of said, you need to put your records out, you know, you've written so much songs. And 2012 is when I released like my first solo record, which was terrifying.
Why?
It was terrifying. It was firstly to be the one in the center. I love collaborating with people. I love playing music. I love being on the side and, you know, serving the artist and serving the song. And so to be in the center and do that was a whole other thing for me. Mm-hmm. And I did the first tour and, you know, barely anyone came. And, you know, you think, oh, because you're going from the band, that it's going to be an easy transition, really, and it wasn't. So finding my way within the community and within the scene and within the music has been a long journey as well, and a complete, like, I know I have, luckily, the history of the Magic Numbers behind me as well, which is great, but it's also been, like, being included into the Americana scene and the community, that's been like a saving grace for me to kind of like be a part of it as well, and to share my music in that way. But yeah, we grew up in Trinidad as well. I was born in Trinidad. So music culture was a big thing, and because we moved around a lot as kids, like lived in New York, music was like a constant. So it was like the thing that we went back to. Parsons Records, Emily Harris, you know, and I just remember growing up seeing my mum and family and my uncles all standing around this stereo listening to Patsy Cline's I Fall to Pieces, and they had Fall to Pieces, they were crying their eyes out, and that was the first sort of seedling, I think, of like what emotion you can connect with people with through song. And Patsy Cline, although she didn't write, you know, her songs, the voice, like, she tells the story.
Yeah. Mm.
She tells the story, and to you know, there's so many ways of connecting through music and song, and yeah, I think that was just like an eye opener, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when this moment came up that you put on your first live show on your own and nobody shared came to the concert, I mean, how did you promote it? Did you feel supported? I mean, that is something that has to do with the business, with how women or female songwriters are appreciated and supported. Can you analyze the situation, why that was the case?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think, I don't know, I think being a singer-songwriter is a very lonely path.
Yes.
And to be a woman playing songs and being a singer-songwriter is an other extra layer of loneliness, I think. And it was difficult to be taken seriously. Also because coming from my band, it was like, was it just a side thing? They sort of dismissed it, I think, entirely. So to be taken seriously, to actually have the songs recognized as the music, to talk about music, whether it was just, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in the look of this person,
yes,
or, you know, you know, are they cool enough? Are they young enough? You know, all of those things are like heavy weights that sort of hang on us before we're even able to say one word or note, you know. And I think that definitely happened a lot. You know, I've had those awkward meetings with industry where they sort of, you know, they dismiss you about your age and, you know, different things like that. And, you know, I'm sure we've all have the stories that we could share in this panel.
Yeah.
But it is a strange, we talk about it and I think we connect through it as well. And it's sad that that is part of our journey.
So what would you recommend as something that helps? I mean, what is needed in this situation to promote a concert, to promote a tour? I'm not even talking about record companies, but just for the live thing.
I think what's needed is right here, really. You know, I had great chats last night with a friend who comes to see us loads, and it's that returning, it's that investment in the artists, it's not just about, it's like you said, you can shift and change. And, you know, as a band as well, we've put out loads of records, and every record that we put out, we don't want a carbon copy of the first one. And we might have lost some people along the way, but that's not going to be our drive for it. So I think the the thing, the need of it is the investment, the sort of time with an artist, the allowing the freedom and that growth to kind of evolve together and connect, continuously kind of communicate. And the support of like Dietmar and people who really get it. Mm. People who, you know, music lovers who really support, you know, like your radio station, you know, like all the sort of like those grassroots, you know, the grassroots music venues that are still standing test of time and past COVID, you know. We need them, and we need you coming to shows, definitely.
Yeah. Pearl, may you tell a little bit about your experiences? I mean, you are, how much are you traveling in the country, or do you have a special bouquet of clubs where you play in LA and the surrounding?
Well, I've been in touring bands since I was 18, and I'm 34 now, so I've been doing this basically my entire adult life. And so I've toured all over America, and I have toured in Europe with other acts that I was in before this, but this is actually my first full European tour, which is very exciting, and I love it here. I've played in the UK quite a bit because my manager is based there. But there's definitely a circuit, you know, in LA, and we live in Joshua Tree now. And there's a great club out there called Pappy and Harriet's, which I recommend everyone go check out if you ever have a chance. It's a roadhouse in the middle of the desert. It's very cool. But yeah, I mean, we love to play for all sorts of different audiences. I mean, we'll go anywhere where people want to listen to our music, you know, like, and like you said, people like Dietmar and festivals like this and just the community, you know. I've kind of realized, like, it's really about creating a community. And I think as you evolve as an artist, there's, you will lose fans. Like, that's definitely, you know, some people are only in it for the moment, and they connect with something, but not something else, and that's totally valid. But I think about artists like David Bowie or Bob Dylan, and they explored so many different sounds, and the people who love them, they might not love every single record, but they're just there to see the artist evolve because they are interested in their perspective. And I'm sort of going a bit off topic of the question, but I think ultimately that's what is needed, and that's why I think we got to just go wherever people want to see us.
And Haley, what are your experiences? I mean, how long are you really giving concerts on your own as a folk singer or singer songwriter?
Yeah, I have the opposite experience in the way of for a long time, only gave, since I was 14, I've played alone as a singer-songwriter, sharing songs and telling stories as a contained show, which I was very drawn to. My parents used to bring me to see, like, singer-songwriters, where I remember I was just as excited for the gaps between the songs as the songs, because of that, this craft of storytelling, all these things. And it's only been later, I'm 28 now, and it's only been in the last 5 years or so that I've dove more into collaboration in the way of my safe world was like me alone with the songs. So it's been the inverse of your journey in the way of getting comfortable feeling like exposed and bringing my artistry in with other people. And
it's by the people.
Yes, well. Yes. And I have been lucky to, and it's been informing my growth. So, but I have been performing alone as a solo singer songwriter for whatever the math is,
there.
So almost 15 years.
I mean, country music has a high life these days, I think. It's cool again, like Lainey Wilson said it so ironically in a song, but it's a truth. I mean, you see that. But in commercial country, I observe that especially the female artist, first they have to look sexy, and then they have to sing. So what is your relation to this need, obviously, to present yourself as a female body and then as a songwriter and performer? I think this is such a challenge to keep it cool. I mean, there are so many cool artists like Margot Price or Sierra Farrell, and they are so aware of everything. And also, like Amanda Shires, she's playing the fiddle, and she's always like, wow, do you really get on stage this way? But she does it. I mean, it's really, it's such a small line, but if you're really a self-aware artist, how do you think about it? How do you feel about it? It's a strong one,
it's,
I know.
It's a big, definitely. We were talking about it earlier. It's a strange one because the way that we dress and the way that we appear should only be for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And there is something amazing about feeling in your power on stage. And you're up there and you've got your boots and you're looking, you know. Mm-hmm. And there is so, you know, it's like we've gone through a history of shame within women and, you know, of feeling like we should dress a certain way and we can't wear this too much, or we're, you know, we're maybe leading on, or, you know, everyone's going to have opinions, or you're maybe prejudged as
yes.
well, right?
That's it.
I mean, Dolly Parton's like a... she's like, you know, the queen of this sort of like, and she's so switched on and she's writing amazing songs, but so that hopefully the art and the creation, I mean, I hope we've evolved so much that we don't pay too much attention to the like comments on like great legs or, you know, or, you know, like in a way it's sort of like a strange, it's a strange balance really, because you shouldn't feel shamed for also being in your sexuality and, mm-hmm. and being brave enough to get up there. And you know, for me it's more of a comfort thing. I mm-hmm. feel in like I feel comfortable playing, and I, you know. But when I'm on stage, I lose myself completely. You don't think about all that, you know, body stuff. I mean, there's so much, but yeah, I'm going to pass on because I'm really curious what you think as well.
Well, again, being born and raised in LA, it's obviously a very looks-focused culture. And I mean, I love LA, so that's just one side of it. And it's also like a negative stereotype, which is not entirely true, but there is an aspect of that. And I do think that just as women, we can be judged whether you look the way they want you to or not, you know? It's like, it's a hard standard to try to meet. And especially when you're a young woman, there's a lot of men in the music industry who are, you know, gonna take advantage in different ways. So it's just a really fine line to walk. And I mean, Dolly Parton's a great example. She kind of turned that on its head to say like, I'm gonna be the stereotype, but I'm choosing it, it's my choice. So taking that agency back, but like you said, it should really be, you know, we should dress the way we feel comfortable. It shouldn't be that you have to be sexually viable to be an artist. And I do think that's kind of like the, you know, arts that stand the test of time are going to go past that. But you shouldn't just be judged because you're wearing something sexy. That doesn't take away from your legitimacy as an artist. But at the same time, you might not be taken seriously for it. It's a tough thing to balance.
Mm-hmm. Strange.
So Rayleigh, you are the youngest again, and I love to hear your opinion on this, because I noticed that especially younger songwriters, they try to ignore all this, what we just mentioned, and I think it's good, it's very good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am the youngest, and I also, like, people ask me at the airport where my parents are. Like, I am, okay, we can call 28 young, but I also happen to look younger than that. So, and I began playing and standing on stages, I would say before I was, I mean, subconsciously, of course, this is there from, you know, as a girl in this society, like, it's there. But before I consciously thought about any of this, I was already standing on stages. So I agree that that it's becoming more common to not care about this, and I think that that's great, and I relate to that. I'm actually more in a moment of what you were speaking of in the way of like using the, creating some portal before stepping on stage to empower myself, whatever that looks like. Because I think for a long time, especially with the way that I toured, super like troubadour, alone, I would just get out of the car in a sweatshirt and play. And this is great for my sense of not thinking about my appearance in a way that's destructive, but there's an element of power and intentionality to being like, okay, I'm going to choose how I present myself to match my energetic offering here, whatever that be, or whatever makes me feel strong. So I'm thinking about these themes a lot lately in that way, but yeah, I would say I didn't care what I wore on stage up until very recently.
So, what happened?
Well, in the way of wanting to be intentional about the energy more than anything. Not really. I don't think a lot about the sexualization. People think I'm 14 anyway, so so my issue with being taken seriously is different. You know, it's not. So that's just my experience with whatever my God-given baby face. Yes. I don't know.
But that is really interesting. Like, there's so many different layers to how we are perceived and what the, you know, the obstacles that we have to overcome as women in the industry. It's just, it's different than it is for men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, you are all very young from my perspective, but you choose a profession that is hardly a tableau for getting older. It's a really tough challenge, especially for women. An old songwriter, let's say like James McMurtry or something, who's telling really life stories and from his experiences stuff, and he's so educated in words and literature and everything, you know, take it really serious. But as a woman, you have to be Lucinda Williams to And she has her problems too. So, what is your perspective? I mean, are you full of hope that it's going to be better?
I feel like it's getting better. I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, the people we're talking about, Emmylou Harris, Lucinda Williams, and, you know, maybe a slightly younger generation but older than me, like Nico Case or Jenny Lewis, or these women are getting older and they're still making amazing music and they have a perspective that is still so valid, of course. I mean, everyone does for their entire life, whether you're a man or a woman or of any age. So I think it's just good that we aren't kind of throwing people away as they get older now. We're actually starting to respect them, of women. I mean, I think we always respected men and you know, their knowledge as our elders, but we're starting to include women in that. So I do think there's a really positive movement towards that, from my perspective.
Yeah, again, like it goes with the same thing with, like, you know, age, you know, it's the same thing to be judged on, isn't it? Even from a younger, you know, if you're younger, you're getting judged. If you're older, you're, you know, and so where's the, you know, you're not taken seriously when you're younger, you know, you're sort of like dismissed when you get older. So it's like, that's the, but I think I don't write a song and think I'm too old. Do you know what I mean? It's just like the core, like if you could come back to the, like, the core of it all is writing songs. The core of it all is sharing your experience, connecting, writing, like, you know, something that someone else can be moved by, hopefully, and to connect with them. They come up and they tell you their story, and then, you know, that hopefully that leads to another song. And, you know, there's no, so in that sense, that's ageless to me. That is timeless. There is no barrier within that. And for those who dismiss older women or younger women, like, you know, then they're not welcome at the shows.
You know, exactly. Right. Well, that speaks to what you said about curating audiences of exactly. people, and what you said about perspective is, if you want to go on a journey of an artist's perspective, man or woman, you're going to be interested in how that perspective grows as it becomes more seasoned and experiences life. So if you only want to be there for the young, sexy portion, then goodbye. And I would rather have a small audience and still play when I'm 60 and have the things to say about being 60 instead of being 28, you know?
Yeah, so. Definitely.
I also find, like, even though I'm writing songs from a, you know, a woman in her 30s perspective, my fan base is oftentimes not that, you know, so clearly whatever I'm saying is relating to people of all ages and genders and stuff. So that's the thing, is like, just because you're a certain type of person doesn't mean the people that are going to connect with you and your audience are going to be the same types of people as you. And you don't want them to be. I mean, I would love to have more young women at my shows. That would be great. But, like, I love all my fans, and I just want people who, you know, love the music, whoever they are.
Yeah. I would like to talk with you about your experiences with the media. especially from my point of view, of course, but in general. A few years ago, I met Jolie Holland for an interview, and that was a time when the record company flew her over to, in this case, Hamburg, and we had slots for interviews around 30 minutes. And I had the slot after a guy, a colleague from the Rolling Stone, I have to mention this paper. And she was so hurt and devastated because this guy constantly asked her whether she writes her own songs and whether she really writes her own songs. She was so broken. I had to build her up, you know, just to be ready for another interview. So how is your experience with journalists, with their questions, with their point of view to your art?
I'll just say, I actually did an interview with Rolling Stone with an amazing female writer.
One of my favorite interviews I've ever done.
So, I mean, it's obviously great when you can talk to someone who is on the same page as you. And again, age, gender aside, I like to see people for who they are. Not to say, of course, there are differences. We shouldn't just try to act like everyone is the same, because that's not true. And there's things that can strengthen our community as women, as people of a certain age, whatever. But we all have differences and similarities regardless. I feel like I have definitely had, and this I guess is going a little off of the journalist thing, but I've definitely had people say to me like, oh, I'm not gonna, like, are you really that serious artist because you dress this way or you look this way? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, obviously that's very hurtful, and I hope that we're moving past that.
Yeah. I mean, being in the Magic Numbers, you have experiences in meeting the press, right?
Yeah.
So how was it? I mean, you have been, just to let the audience know, that was two pair of siblings, always female and male. And how was that meeting the press during that days?
Oh, there's lots of stories. Definitely lots of stories. We had a really difficult time with the press, actually, when we came out. Again, we didn't sort of like, when you create songs in your bubble, you just make it and you don't think of anything. And then suddenly you have to share it with the world, and everyone has their opinion and viewpoint and judgments. And so they picked up on the fact that we weren't the sort of skinniest of bands.
I have to admit.
Yes, it was huge.
I wrote a review of your first album.
Oh, okay.
And yes, of course I was, but I made a maybe not so nice comment. A very hairy act. The men all had beard, and she has these wonderful hair. A very hairy act. Yeah. I wrote.
Yeah, we got that as well. That sort of like, you know. They compared us to the Mamas and Papas, and you know, it was an easy. And I think the mad thing about media and press is like, oh my god, it's like copy and paste. Mm-hmm. One person does it, mm-hmm. suddenly you've realized that everyone's doing it. And wow. It's an easy job for them. They mm-hmm. don't have to think about anything. They just go, okay, this one's doing this. Mm-hmm. That is instantly, and then that's attached to you for your whole lifetime of that band, you know, and all that sort of record. And we got like, I mean, we went on, this is quite a vulnerable thing to say, but we went on Top of the Pops for the first time, and we got introduced by, what's his name, Richard Bacon, and he sort of said, welcome to the stage, just a big fat melting pot of talent. So, you know, wow. Are you going to go on stage? We didn't. So we walked off.
Really?
We said,
how brave! Yeah. How brave!
And you know, I was 19, 20 at the time.
It's so hurtful.
It hurt.
Yeah.
It really hurt.
Absolutely hurtful.
And, but, you know, we walked off, and then we had literally, you know, paparazzi and everything, like all the media, like chasing us down, with chasing our van and stuff, taking pictures. And then the next day we were on all the broadsheets. And like, was, we didn't do anything for that. It wasn't like we intended to sort of have that backlash or that sort of attention after it. In fact, it was a bit kind of crap because we had to constantly sort of talk about this for ages.
The drama.
Yeah.
Instead of
the music. And that was just like, it was just so hard.
I mean, I'm horrified to hear that you had to experience that. I mean, I think, makes me think about Karen Carpenter.
Yeah.
Who was such an incredible musician, so talented, ultimately died from having an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. This is what we're pushing people to. I mean, I hope that we're moving past that in society, but I mean, that's so far off from what we should be discussing when we're talking about music. It's something you listen to. It's not about what you're looking at. I mean, you want to put on a show, but that can look any way, any size, any shape. It doesn't matter. Like, this isn't about your body.
I mean, it was great because we just became the band that we wanted to be, which was which was standing our ground, and we continued to do that.
This is such an important moment when you decide not to follow this, not to take anything, you know.
And we lost loads of stuff along the way because of that.
Yeah.
Because of that resistance to.
No, you won a lot. You won a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. And you did, and then it sort of like brings up that question of like, you know, what's the level of success?
Mm.
And, you know, it's how you feel, really, ultimately. It's the, you know, feeling authentic in your decisions and what you're putting out there and the music you're creating.
Mm.
I feel like it's just like a way for people to kind of continue to control women by telling them that you're not worthy if you don't look a certain way, and that's more important than the music that you make or the statement that you're making.
Mm.
Exactly, yeah.
And how much is, how do you see the fact of competition between women? I mean, we can't really ignore it, although we don't like it, but there is something going on, isn't it? Do you acknowledge that, or do you try to breathe it away?
I feel like I have a lot of friends that are female musicians, and we have a great support system for each other because we've all been through the same things.
You know?
Like, again, it's very much the media loves to pit women against each other and people in general. And we love to build people up and then tear them down. I mean, look at like a Britney Spears, for example, you know, we take young, very vulnerable people and put them into the spotlight and put all this pressure on them that they have to look a certain way, have to act a certain way. And then when they go off script, then we throw them away and act like they're crazy, and we're not there to support them. I mean, it's really sad. I think we should really try to come together more, because we have more in common than we have different.
Yeah, because the stereotype is coming elsewhere. It's not actually like, you know, I think Britney Spears is a great one, great example of that. But I think like, I actually, as I've gotten older, and I've been around a lot of male musicians, and you know, I want to share the stage more with women. That's been like a big part of like, I do these like, you know, Women's International Day like shows, and it's like a multi-artist kind of bill, and everyone's, you know, all the musicians, the band is all playing, you know, and that was like getting more women on stage has been like, you know, a personal kind of thing for me, really. But yeah, it's a. I think we're still doing a lot of work on it.
Of course, yeah.
And within the media as well. Mm. I mean, I think words are so important, and they can last a lifetime. And you know, now everyone can do their own social media and their own kind of, which in some ways takes the power back.
Yeah, that's something I really want to mention as well, is the whole technology and production side of music. How much do you feel really in a new age of doing it on your own? I mean, you don't really need this misogynist who is critical about women when you step into a studio. You don't need him anymore. How do you produce your music? What is your relation to this production side of music? How is technology helping you?
I'm happy to go. Well, I feel very lucky. I work with my partner, who is very supportive, and we have our own home studio, so we're definitely moving away from the general studio system. And I think you kind of mentioned earlier the gatekeepers of the industry, you know, it's all changing so much so quickly. And there's pros and cons to that, but I do think just being able to take control of your own music, making it in a place where you feel comfortable with people you feel comfortable with, and having social media to present yourself the way that you want to. There are less avenues to promote your music, or less traditional avenues, but that just means we have to go find more alternative places. And
they are already there. And I mean, you as a producer, Michelle, you as a producer, how do you see that? I mean, when you are sitting behind the counter, you're not in the studio, you're behind the glasses, you're in the controls. How do you feel there? How do you manage it?
Now, you know, diving into the production work, and I haven't got my own studio yet, so
That's
something I'm really looking forward to. Because there's so many, like, artists that I really believe in, you know, grassroots level, and, like, you know, that you want to kind of give them that space in some ways, a sort of safe space to create. And I'm definitely more on the sort of side of, like, arranging. Like, I love, like, you know, if I was to talk about elements of, like, production, would be, like, the in it with everyone in the band, kind of seeing, like, you know, you're kind of walking around going, oh yeah, let's try this, you know, that sort of thing, or like just letting it happen kind of thing. But yeah, it's to find women in the industry to do, you know, for instance, even on tour, like touring, like tour managers, crew, like it's a very thin, like this, I don't know any guitar tech. Female guitar techs, you know, to create.
I know one, definitely, always.
So you know, that's kind of like to find those people are great as well. To find like in that.
But it is so rare. It's something rare. Like I know one.
Yeah.
It's so rare.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, like believing in artists, and now us kind of having been around the block for a while, it's kind of cool to have the platform. Like, again, my partner and I started a label that goes with our studio. And so far we've only signed one other act outside of us, and it is actually an all-male act. But the first act that I scouted and wanted to sign was a woman. And she, I don't know what she's doing, actually. But she's a bit flighty, but she's an amazing musician. And the idea of being able to find people and kind of pick out these diamonds in the rough, as artists, though, you know, not as a major record label that's looking at someone for the way that they look. This woman was older and has incredible songs, and I just saw her and I was like, you know, the rest of the industry might pass someone like this by right now because she's an older woman, but her songs and her voice are incredible and she really has something to say. So it's cool to be able to create artist-focused studios, labels, whatever, and create a community and give people a voice.
And when it comes to video shooting, how is that situation? I mean, you, for example, have very poetic, always kind of nature connected videos. How is this production side of this?
Well, actually, I work with my drummer in my band, who's amazing. Videographer and Emma Holbrook is just there, and she created all those videos with me. We talk about film and movies, and it's a continuation of the story, really. But yeah, I think you can do, again, you can do. The tough thing is, though, and I'll be real with it, is that the expectation of an artist to do absolutely everything is like, it's insane. It's a lot.
I see.
Because there isn't that, there isn't those trusted avenues that we can go to now. I think that's the really hard thing, and I think we're having to kind of build it for ourselves. In the ways that we feel safe and true about it is to do it organically, and that takes time. It takes time to find the musicians to play with that you trust.
And as we just, for me, that's been the journey because I began so singular solo in my own world. Like, I can't let anyone into this.
Which I can relate to, by the way.
This is my safe world. Like, what do you mean? Suddenly, the safety is not there if I open it. And I have for sure had the experience in many collaborative environments, be it in the studio or in visual production or whatever, where I've seen this stereotypical difference between working with a man and then worked with women and felt a totally different energy. But also the people I record my music with now, one of which is here playing with me, Pau, and Yol, the engineer we work with, and Pau's brother are now, are three men that I feel just as safe and at home. It's not so, you know, binary as, it's finding the safe people. And I only began that journey maybe 5 years ago as an adult versus a kid working with amazing, also amazing collaborators, but a different dynamic, you know. So
it's also their belief and their investment and their sort of like care and love to your music that it becomes a collective, you know.
Absolutely.
You're a collaborator. That's a true collaborator. You know, it's like the service of the song.
Yeah.
You know, forget everything else, gender, like whatever it is. Yeah. It's coming back to like making sure that a song delivers in the way it should do.
Yes. Thank you very much. That's a very, very good saying. That's, I love it. Mm. Service of the song.
Yeah.
I just want to expand a little bit on what you were saying about video and photo work and whatever. Just that I've worked with so many amazing female photographers and videographers, and I do love being shot from the female gaze because it is a very different perspective, you know, being seen as a woman by a woman. And I've worked with amazing male photographers and videographers too, but it's great to work with someone who just is seeing you from a similar point of view.
Well, thank you very much for all these insights. I guess we went pretty much to the core of being a female musician. So thank you very much for your time. You all three have your shows ahead of you. So relax a little bit, and thank you very much for being here. It was very interesting. I hope you liked it too.
Special thanks to Christine for preparing.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know how to fix this mess. As a man, I always want to fix things. I don't know how to fix it for you. But I feel like my takeaway from this and learning how to deal with my wife, who I love. Dietmar and I have this little joke where we say we listen and we don't judge. But I feel like there's a bit of a lesson there. If we actually listen to what you say and, you know, try not to judge and actually understand it, maybe we can start to make things a little easier for you by letting you speak and hearing what you have to say. So thank you very much for sharing your perspectives, ladies.
Thank
I really enjoyed that.
Thank
you. Yeah, doors are about to open next door, so if you want to go get your spot or you want to go have some coffee and cake before the show.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's so fun.
I've been through so much to you.
I know.
Well,
tough questions.
Yeah.
I know, but good.
Yeah, like juicy, real stuff.
Yeah,
the real stuff. I'm glad it was.